Welcome to Sparking Genius, hosted by the Dwight Global Network of Schools, a podcast series exploring what the future of education holds.
Welcome to Sparking Genius, the podcast where we dive deep into the dynamic and ever-evolving world of global education. I'm your host, Deanne Drew, Head of School at Dwight School New York and Global Education Director for the Dwight Network of Schools. In each episode, we explore how innovative ideas, technologies, and thought leaders are shaping the future of education worldwide. Today's episode focuses on one of the most powerful and often underestimated drivers of student success, school leadership. Research from the Wallace Foundation shows that leadership is second only to classroom instruction in its impact on student learning. In fact, it accounts for nearly a quarter of schools' overall influence on student outcomes. But what does that actually look like in practice? And how do great leaders move beyond strategy and into the daily rhythms of a school? How do they balance tradition, innovation, and the complexity of leading within a global network? To explore these questions, I'm thrilled to be joined by Chris Beddoes, Head of School at Dwight London. Chris brings a thoughtful and global perspective to leadership, grounded in both experience and a deep commitment to building strong school cultures. Let's get started. Well, Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. This is an honour and a privilege to be joining you on this Sparking Genius podcast. I'm very excited.
Well, you have a lot of experience at Dwight and in education generally. But before we get to our main topic today on school leadership, I'd love to ask you some icebreaker questions so that the parents and listeners of the podcast just get to know you a little better. Can you tell us who was your favourite teacher when you were a student and why?
Yeah, well, hi, everybody. It's a pleasure to be with you all on this podcast. Yeah, my favourite teacher I remember very vividly, grade two teacher up in the north of England in a small town called York, a male teacher called Mr. Coop. And what particularly stands out about his teaching and his pedagogy was it felt different. It didn't feel like it was the norm or the mainstream. And what I mean by that is, I reflect on it now, and I didn't know this at the time, obviously, when I was a 6, 7, 8 year old, but he wasn't afraid to take risks. He took us out of the classroom to learn in the playground, to learn at the farm where we had an overnight trip. And it was those experiences that certainly stuck with me. And really, it was the joy of learning he infused in his class and in me. He was my role model as a youngster. And even when I went higher up the school into kind of grade 4, 5 and grade 6, I always remembered his lessons as being very exciting. It never felt like maths on a Thursday afternoon. It never felt like science on a Tuesday morning. It always felt like it was interdisciplinary. Disciplinary in nature. And again, it was that outdoor learning and the trips that we did that certainly stick with me. And then again, knowing what I know now, I realized that his methodology was very, very similar to the International Baccalaureate that we follow here now. So he was my favorite teacher, hands down, just for those reasons.
Yeah. And so important too, that memory came from primary school. I think as we often think more of upper years of teachers who make an impression, but amazing that you had that early experience as well. So that's great.
Yeah, I think that shaped me going into primary school teaching. But yeah, mine was from a very early age, a very vivid memory of this wonderfully eccentric character who broke the norms of education and really did things differently. Yeah, a bit of a renegade, a bit of a maverick, but he was a wonderful man indeed.
That's great. Have you got a memory of a really important non-academic lesson, maybe it was from primary school, during your time in school that also changed or made such an impression on you? Because we often think about what happens in the classroom and the teacher that helped us with that challenge or inspired us. But how about a non-academic experience or someone that you may have had that really resonated with you?
Yeah, not one in particular, but again, it's primary school that strikes me as being the most exciting and joyful time for me as a student and as a child. Coming from a family of four boys, we were all kind of at similar age, we're all at school together, but it's primary school where it felt like it was, you were learning the most, but it felt not as serious or as high stakes as when I got to secondary school and then higher up there, really. And then I always think about Einstein's quote where he says that education is what remains when you forget everything else you were taught. And for me, it's the sporting experiences. I was never never great at sport, but I was always okay. But it was just the opportunities I had at a sporting level, not super professional, nothing like that, but just to be given a chance, just to be included in teams felt very special to me. And I don't know if it is non-academic or academic, it's an extension of the curriculum, I guess, but it was those extracurricular things. Those trips were world-class. When we got to go overnight as a 10-year-old, 11-year-old, and 8-year-old, 9-year-old, that felt so exciting for me because you were still learning stuff, but it was out of the classroom and it felt more organic and just huge growth in terms of non-academic skills. But they were the most important for me because they shaped, I think, my character, my confidence, my ability to do well in social situations, much more than when I was a little bit older, moving into secondary and tertiary education. So they were some big lessons I learned, is to get on with people from all different backgrounds, learn what was right and wrong, to negotiate and to navigate challenges with independence, with confidence, but having that open-mindedness to other people's opinions. And I was a bit of a brash young man when I was a youngster, and sometimes I thought my opinion was always right and it was my way or the highway. But those non-academic situations of sport and trips really made me realize that there's different perspectives out there, and everybody with their differences can be right. It's just reaching those shared consensuses.
That's great. If you're taking those ideas of what you've discussed about what really made an impression on you from primary or those other non-academic experiences, if someone said to you, hey, you can add one required course and every school, whether it be across the Dwight Network or indeed in the UK where you're situated, what would it be? What's the one thing you would love to mandate to say that everybody needs to do?
Great question. I would certainly make it mandatory for every child from the age of 2 to graduation to do some green skills curriculum or component. And I wouldn't let them graduate out of the diploma program or sixth form until they've met the criteria to pass a green skills curriculum. And I wouldn't have said that when I was at school. I don't think the climate crisis was as pressing in the 80s and 90s. But now, if I was setting up the education system from day dot, I would certainly add a green skills curriculum from the age of 2. And it would obviously be developmentally appropriate, but it would tie into science. It could tie into all those fun things higher up the school. But I wouldn't allow any student to graduate from the sixth form, what we call in the UK, right, from 18-year-old education, without that mandated green skills curriculum. I can see it being alongside in our diploma program and international baccalaureate speak, like an element of CAS or TOK or the extended essay. I would move one of those aside and put in a green skills component that is explicitly teaching kids and empowering them to make a significant difference with the climate and their environment.
That's so interesting. And I know you've done a lot of work in that area just for Dwight London, and you really have spearheaded that requirement.
Yeah, we're really proud to be one of the leading schools in the UK who do Forest School. Forest School is an outdoor learning curriculum that we do for all of our students from age 2 all the way through to age 13, 14. The kids get out once a week to go into our local forest, and they do everything from whittling to first aid, outdoor first aid, to fire lighting, to survival skills. And it connects to the curriculum components as well. They do language arts out in the forest. They do science components. They do mathematics. It's fantastic for many reasons, and the parents love it. It's a perfect antidote to the saturation of screens in education to get them out into the forest. We're a city school, so to have that in our curriculum is fantastic. And to do it up to the age of 13, 14 is great. And with the green skills curriculum, we're going to start to try and weave that into our primary school and our nursery, because we're finding that as a school leader, there's more flex in the primary school timetable than there is when the mandates of education inevitably kick in as they get higher up. So we're going to take advantage of that flexibility and the advantage of the agility of the primary years program framework to embed some green skills for our 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, all the way up to our 11-year-olds. So they graduate through their year 6, grade 5 PYP exhibition with a green skills kind of curriculum under their belt.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So that's a great segue into our topic for today in regards to the importance of school leadership. And I mentioned in the introduction that research is certainly showing that school leadership is second only to fantastic classroom instruction on its impact in student learning. I think sometimes parents understand how important it is that school leadership is great, but we forget the trickle-down effect across the whole umbrella of the school. So I'd love to hear from you, What do you think about in regards to leadership and the significant impact on student outcomes? How does that shape the way you approach your role day to day at Dwight London?
Yeah, any school leaders out there, I doff my cap to you. It is a hard job and you're balancing your own personal stuff as well, that people don't really acknowledge that, right? So let me start by acknowledging that for those school leaders out there, your personal side of your life is really, really important. You've got to take care of yourself to be the best version you can be at school. And it's a hard job, but it is a privileged position to be in, to manage or to oversee the education of children from the age of 2 all the way up. It's such a phenomenal, phenomenal experience. And it does have a significant impact on student outcomes. Students and families need to believe in the leadership of a school. They need to see the leadership of the school. And I don't mean see in terms of just written communication and hearing updates. I think the big thing that shapes my leadership when I think about student outcomes is visibility. Am I visible and do I know the students? The whole reason for me being a head of school is to make sure that our students are happy, healthy, and safe. And that keeps all of school leaders up at night, is a student not being safe, a student not being healthy, a student not being happy. When you've got that perfect kind of trifecta of those things, student outcomes happen. Academic progress happens. Academic excellence happens. And for that, for me, how that shapes the way I approach my day-to-day activities as a head is just to get out there, walk around, not be wedded to my desk, make sure I'm very visible to the teachers, but also to the students so they realize who I am. They have a trusted figure in the school leadership that they can go to if they've got a problem, if they've got something to celebrate. And it's the same for parents as well, being visible at the gate in the morning, the gate in the evening, just so they're aware of who you are, because you can get lost in the policies, you can get lost in the minutiae of complaints, grumbles, etc., etc. But as a school leader, it's really important you're visible. We hear all the time making thinking visible, being a very good pedagogy for teaching and learning, but making leadership visible should be the mantra of many leaders in our schools, because again, it's parents buy in, and I don't mean buy in the monetary sense, they buy in to the beliefs and values of a school leader and a school head. And I do believe that improves student outcomes in terms of well-being and academic performance if they see the head of school or a senior leader as their champion. They know what university placements they've got. They know that their cat's just had an operation at the vet. They know if their grandma's unwell. That is really, really important for a child's sense of self and their sense of value in a school community, whatever school that is.
Yeah, that's great. And I think heads have had a really tough decade. I think I was talking to you and some other Dwight heads back in January and saying this has been a really tough decade for school leaders between COVID and October 7th and the geopolitical system that we're dealing with right now. It's been really tough. So I agree with you in regards to finding that way to be visible and be that role model and show the personal side of leadership with community members. That's really important.
Yeah, all those things, they're tough when you're in them, right? They're really, really tough when you're in them. But I feel like I've learned so much from the toughest of occasions and the toughest times. You've got to try and put as positive a spin on it. All those tough times, it makes you a better communicator. It makes you more resilient. It makes you a better leader for sure, because you realize that you don't want the world to be that place for your kids, not just your own personal kids, but your school students as well. And that makes me even work just as hard to fulfill our mission and vision to prepare children to be leaders in the world and change makers. And we want them to build bridges and not put up walls that they're seeing everywhere. And so those challenges, it's been an incredibly tough 5-10 years for sure. If I started with brown hair and now it's gone gray for many, many different reasons, not just my own children, but it has really developed me as a leader, those tough times for sure.
Yeah. You've talked about being visible and being present. And as we said, the research really suggests that a leader's influence directly impacts student outcomes, but it also impacts school culture, how teachers are performing, and of course, the systems within a school. Where do you focus your energy to make the most difference? I hear what you're saying about being visible, it's crucial, but where have you really sort of honed in the 7 years you've been at Dwight London to make that biggest difference?
I think my biggest focus is twofold. It's to be a role model And I mean a role model as a teacher. That's what I do. That's who I am. So I'm never out of the classroom, not just to do observations. I teach. I teach many, many times during the week. And I encourage all of my senior leaders to teach because we're always up on stage at inset days or staff training saying, hey, guys, inquiry is this or try that. And you've got to know what the teacher's pinch points are. You've got to know what the student's experience is and how they're feeling. And that is really my biggest energy focus, is to make sure I'm still in the classroom teaching. I cover the nursery, which is 2 and 3 year olds, once a week. I teach year 6, which is grade 5, once a week. I do a grade 6 business management course. I enjoy that. It's a pressure on my time for sure, but it's a great kind of yardstick for the other teachers to realize that you can still do what you were trained to do and still do what you're about, what you talk about all the time. And the other big thing really is to focus on communication, face-to-face communication. I try and have one-to-one meetings every week with different people, and as much as possible try and avoid an email reply and get and see somebody. And I have a goal that I shared with a few of the other Dwight heads to try and make sure I have a meaningful connection with every staff member once a week. Really, really difficult. And I never achieved the goal, but that's all right. That's okay. But to try and do that, it just makes everyone feel valued. And it makes everyone feel that they're part of the culture of Dwight School London. And that's from everybody, from the kitchen staff to the senior leadership team to the parent governors. Trying to have that face-to-face weekly check-in that's non-school based. Hey, how are you doing? How's the family? That's really, really important. Again, that sets the tone, and it sets the tone of culture for the rest of the school. There's still a social skill gap for adults, let alone children. It's making sure that I'm communicating with people face-to-face is really important, because I enjoy that, right? We're humans. Humans need to interact with each other and talk about life, not just about work. And that's really, really important. And that really does impact culture in a positive way, because it makes then the difficult conversations you have to have with staff or parents or students a little bit easier, because you've got a very good rapport and relationship with them. And it makes the very positive conversations you have to have with staff, parents, and students even better, because they know you, you know them, and they know what you're all about. So that transparency of leadership, it is crucially important to impact culture for a very positive way.
Interestingly, you were talking about, wouldn't it be great if we could reset, when we were talking about what subject would you bring in? And education is full of tradition and hasn't necessarily changed the model for quite a long time. But we're also under pressure to innovate faster than ever now. So how do you decide as a school leader what's worth preserving in education versus what we need to evolve to ensure that our students get the support and the right pathway?
It's a great question. It's one that we talk about quite often, is where we think about admission of students and new families to Dwight, and they love Dwight. They love the international aspect of who we are, the global network. Innovation of education always comes with a little bit of a warning label. If you innovate so much, parents are like, wait a minute, what? We just want the fundamentals of academics here so our kid can get into Oxbridge and then fly away. And we have this debate all the time in the United Kingdom, where the international baccalaureate is a tough sell. It's a tough market because it's an unknown quantity still. There's not many schools that do it. The UK national curriculum is the common language of education, and it's academic excellence, academic excellence, academic excellence. So when you're innovating as a school like we do at Dwight, who are at the forefront of innovation in London and the United Kingdom, it does come with that warning label that how do you package this to a parent group who are very familiar with one national curriculum style? That's a really exciting challenge for us. And in terms of what we're doing that we think what's worth preserving in a UK education setting, not just preserving, but enhancing, is career readiness and career education. School is career guidance and career education from year 5 is a statutory guidance and lower down the school as well. We want to really enhance career readiness by promoting and marrying that with the approaches to learning skills from the International Baccalaureate. We do this already. If a kid can master social skills, communication skills, research skills, thinking skills, and self-management skills, that's going to get them a much more successful job than somebody who doesn't master those skills but gets 3 A stars at A level or 45 points but hasn't mastered those skills. But preserving that career readiness, that skill development, it is really, really important. And also the preservation of a well-rounded, intentional pastoral curriculum is vital. is absolutely vital. And parents then, they can't argue with that because you're teaching children to be good children. We know that the International Baccalaureate places a high priority on making sure that kids are internationally minded, they can interact with others with intercultural understanding and respect. But what I'm talking about from a pastoral curriculum is, are we talking about misogyny? Are we talking about consent? Are we talking about sexual harassment, sexual violence against women? Are we talking about these big issues in an actual lesson that's timetabled rather than an add-on? Because these, particularly we're seeing in independent schools in the UK, you know, that there's still a cohort of boys and young men who are influenced by negative figures in the media, and they're driving this narrative for the boys to think they can run roughshod, particularly in independent school education. Our job as educators, a very privileged job, is to be able to educate our young people to be better citizens wherever they land in the world. So that pastoral education is worth preserving to the nth degree, so our children, our young people can enter the world of university, college and life knowing how to say no, that's a sentence, knowing what's right, what's wrong, knowing how to interact with other people, other genders in a rapidly changing world. And then we can't talk about rapidly changing without mentioning AI and all of that sort of stuff, right? And how great that is. But it comes with the safeguards that you have to put in place as a school. You have to teach your students that AI is fantastic, yes, but let's be responsible digital citizens and let's make sure you're using it as a tool to empower, not as a tool to do something that's not particularly principled.
I'm really glad you gave examples of that pastoral, because I think schools have more and more had to take that on. And also describing it as pastoral is often a very British or Commonwealth way to describe social and emotional wellness, which we've had to weave in. And all of the ideas you gave and watching the documentary Into the Manosphere, and there are just so many of these relevant, important topics that we need to help our children navigate. And then on top of that, we've got AI, which is really impacting all areas of life, and school can't ignore that. But how do we do it ethically and appropriately and help students figure out that while it's still under rapid development? So school leaders have a lot on their plates to try and balance between academic requirements, social, emotional, extracurricular. How do you bring teachers along without making them feel like they're overwhelmed? How do you help them be collaborative? And rather than just a top-down, hey, we're doing this, this is the way you should do it, there's no discussion, how do you help them with these changes that education needs to absorb?
Some of those changes are statutory, right? So they don't have a choice. The government says you've got to do this because it's good practice, or they just make these changes, we have to do them. And as a leader, it's finding ways to do it. Again, role modeling is very important, but also recognizing that I'm not the expert in the room in many of the meetings I'm in. You'll all be surprised about that for those of you who know me. And you've got to realize that the head of school is not the expert. The buck stops with them. But as a head of school, you've got to swallow your pride on many, many occasions and be very humble and realize that there's experts in the school that you can give ownership of these initiatives to. And that becomes then much more collaborative, because rather than always hearing from Chris or Deanne or any head, it becomes a little bit diluted, the message. But if you can empower those people who are experts in AI, experts in pastoral care, and it's not always you and your modeling lifelong learning as a head of school, and then it also helps to form some sort of succession planning. Whenever a leader leaves, you need to have somebody on deck to fulfill the roles and responsibilities. So you always want to be nurturing the next head of Dwight School London. I aren't going anywhere, but you always want to be nurturing the next iteration of whatever leadership position you are. So to bring teachers along in a way that doesn't feel like it's the Chris show or it's come from Blake Spawn or come from the government per se, is really empowering those people who are passionate about sustainability, AI, innovation, pastoral care, recognizing and appreciating their efforts. It's finding creating ways to recognize and appreciate their work in that. And I find that becomes more collaborative rather than top down.
Yeah, it's so important to foster an understanding that school leadership is something anybody can attain and can do. I think there's often this mysticism around the head of school or something. And I often say to people, it's not rocket science. It's you've got to learn while you're in the role. And what you were giving were clear examples of like, how do you lift up people so that they can see themselves in leadership positions, just like we do with students and helping them find those skill sets as well to step up, to perhaps be an ambassador when somebody from admissions comes by or a guest speaker comes in and the student introduces them. But we have to do that with the adults that we're surrounded by as well.
Yeah, it's like you said, there's no secret sauce to being a head of school. You're almost learning on the job. Every day is different, but it's being transparent enough where you can be to have someone shadowing you once in a while. So I have our current NYP coordinator shadows me once every Friday, once in a while, because it's great for her CPD. That's what she wants to do. There's nothing that I need to hide on my Friday meeting docket, but it's such a good learning experience for her because she can ask questions. It's a safe space and it gets to see, is that where I want to go with my career? And it's really promoting those within the community who want to take that step up to leadership. And that's why I say all the time, if there's an internal position available in a leadership sphere, just go for it. Interview experience is phenomenal. Just to get that, no one's going to stop you applying for any job. And even if you don't think you've got a chance to get it, it shows intent that you want to be a leader. And that's a really important thing to make sure you build sustainability in your leadership team in a school.
Yeah. Well, we're unique too, because as heads, we're not just leading one school at Dwight, but we're all very interconnected with this global network that adds another layer of opportunity. And Dwight is uniquely positioned as this global network of schools, and we're opening a new school in September in Cairo, so just adding to the family. And it feels very relevant to us when we're in the sphere of education where international baccalaureate and global vision is so important. And obviously, research backs that up too, saying that networked learning, that schools connected across geographies, can really create richer, more authentic learning experiences. What do you see as a head of school in a network, in a global network, that really focuses on that aspect of education and bringing people together? What do you see that helps unlock particular opportunities and experiences for both students and teachers in London because of the network?
Well, first of all, shout out to the heads of Dwight schools around the world. It's my second favorite WhatsApp group behind my family group. It's a phenomenal network of like-minded leaders and individuals. I don't know how Blake Spahn, our proprietor and vice chancellor, has managed to get people who are so similar in ethos. It's hard to do. I've been part of a few networks in my time, and it's hard to get that. It really is fantastic when we can all get together face to face. It's a hugely important thing for heads of school out there and school leaders to have your own professional learning network. And even if you're not within a network of schools, make sure you have your own professional learning community, because you need to offload about stuff as head of school that your spouse might not understand or realize, but other heads will. It's a really, really important network for me for that reason, but also to get the temperature of things around the world. And when you think about the interconnectivity of our world and you think about the relative complexities, let's say, of the geopolitical climate and the conflicts that are around the world, that's impacting all of our networks, all of our schools around the world. Every single one of our international campuses is directly or indirectly impacted by global strife, global commerce, global trade. So being able to lean on each other is really, really important. And parents have seen that value in the network as well. There's a conflict in one part of the world. Hey, I need to get out of there. Can I go to another Dwight school easy enough? Yes, you can. Of course you can. I think you say this, Deanna, as well, but we say it to our alumni when they graduate, that Dwight is your port in a storm. If you need us at any time, we can be here to support you and kind of coax you and nurture you. And the beautiful thing is that the learning doesn't miss a beat. The parent community doesn't miss a beat because they're so similar. The IB provides this framework, and because we're really closely connected, the Dwight Schools group, a child or a family being able to move from one Dwight school to another has 100% been positive in my experience. That is what a Dwight education gets you, is that high quality education anywhere in the world. And our students benefit because we have these unique cultural exchanges and opportunities. Listen, our nursery kids in London, they do a project with our nursery students in Hanoi. They FaceTime the nursery and kindergarten in New York to find out what's life like outside your window. Our year six and grade five have got a reciprocal exchange, which again, go into one of your initial questions about what the kids are going to remember when they leave Dwight. They're going to remember these cultural exchanges. And the benefit of that is it makes our children in London realize there's a bigger world out there when they're 3 and 4 years old, when they're 11 and 12 years old. And also, it exposes them to children who look different to them, who might think a little differently, who believe in different things. And that's really, really important as well for that growth of them as individuals. So that network is super powerful for families and students. And then for our teachers and educators, if you're looking for a job internationally, there's no place you need to look further than a Dwight school because the network is phenomenal. I got to move from New York to London. Not only was that great for me personally, but great professionally. You can become part of this fantastic leadership academy, which is the most amazing professional development and professional growth opportunities. It's all part of being a Dwight employee. And at Dwight, I have to say, you come first as an individual. Your growth, your well-being is prioritized just as much as the students' growth and well-being. We're super excited about Cairo. It's going to be our closest Dwight school flight time-wise. So we're super excited to do more collaboration with them in the right time zone, because that's often the barrier, right, is figuring out when anyone's awake or when everyone's asleep. But the network is hugely important, particularly in this, the world that we're in now in 2026. For people to be able to connect across borders and realize that there's other people out there who are nice and other people out there who are kind and caring and compassionate, that's really important because that demystifies some of the stuff they're seeing on their newsfeed that everything's doom and gloom. And I know it's a challenging time out there, but we've got to find those pocketfuls of happiness and positivity for our students so they're not immersed in the stress and anxieties and the complexities of the world.
I really appreciate the support that each of the schools give one another. They're very unique in their own way because of where they are in the world and their cultures and their faiths and their languages that they really promote. But of course, there is this common family feeling across, and whether it's students cross-collaborating, like you mentioned in those fantastic experiences that your London students have, or whether it be teachers doing professional development and leadership opportunities with other educators across the Dwight network. And of course, leadership too, being able to share experiences and following that spark of genius isn't just for the students, which is so important to our mission, but it's finding that spark of genius in educators and leaders and making sure we motivate them all the time and validate them for the career that they've undertaken as a leader and as a teacher. Well, I know we're getting towards the end of our session here, but I'd love to ask you about some leadership principles and about the future that you see for school leaders. What gives you the most optimism about the future of education and the direction that schools are going into, particularly the global perspective?
What gives me optimism? Many things give me optimism. I think it's just seeing the children enjoying learning gives me optimism and gives me hope. And particularly when those kids who have got maybe learning challenges, learning needs, seeing them meet with success, EAL learners, English as additional language, those students who have perhaps got barriers is not the right word, but have got more hills to climb when it comes to academia or success, that gives me huge optimism. And I'm a primary school educator, right? That's my background, that's my training. So when I was thrown into the headship of a school that went up to the age of 18, it was a little daunting. Goodness, you're going to have to be talking to 16, 17, 18 year olds who, by the way, often look older than I did. That gives me optimism, though, because having conversations about physics, philosophy, life with a 17 and 18 year old, it shows me that there's a great strength in the current generation. They get a bad rap. They get a bad rap, kids do in general, but we're all kids. We have to remember that. But I'm really optimistic about the future of education when it comes to the children that we get to see every day, the progress they make, and also the families that choose a Dwight education. That gives me optimism because they're coming from all around the world in Dwight London, and they're all coming together from all different backgrounds, from areas of the world that are at conflict with each other. And at Dwight, they're all getting along in the playground, in coffee mornings, in events, very harmoniously, when they've got very different beliefs and very different opinions. That shows to me that the world can be great. The world can have everybody from different backgrounds working together to be successful and to build bridges. And I'm very optimistic about being in a position of leadership. We're at a time of really great educational change with AI. I think it's an opportunity, and I think there's challenges as well. But I think the benefits will outweigh the negatives once we get our heads around it. It's that rapid moving pace. But I'm just usually optimistic in general about the future of education, because I know the kids that graduate from Dwight schools around the world go to any university, they're successful. And I love, love, love hearing from alumni when they say, thanks. Thanks so much, because university college was a breeze because of the skills that we prepared them with in school to be successful for the future. And listen, I'm a dad, as you know. I've got a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old. And I'm also optimistic because what I say now, I can see in practice. I can see their development as young human beings and the way that they're developing as caring, empathetic, open-minded individuals because of the education they're getting with us. So that's really, really given me a sense of optimism and pride as a dad, as well as a head of school.
And if you could give one piece of advice to school leaders who may be listening in on this conversation today, where do you think schools need to be bolder as they go forward? Or what could school leaders really be considering that is important for them right now?
I think just be brave. Don't be afraid to be brave. Being fearful means that nothing will happen or nothing will innovate. And I think it's also be bold. This is really in a UK-specific context, this next expression, but be bold and be willing to collaborate with other schools. I feel like there's a sense of competition among schools, whether that's independent schools or state schools, but we're all in the same business. We're all in the same game of education here. Be bold in your collaborative efforts with other schools in your local area. Share things, share resources, share knowledge, because that's going to help young people everywhere. And that's what we want to do. And also, not maybe bolder, but never forget about mental health and well-being for young people. Never let that be forgotten in all of this AI and this great curriculum revolution that we're in and this evolution we're in. Don't forget, there's still going to be kids out there for time immemorium who are going to need mental health support, and be that trusted figure for young people in your setting.
They're great suggestions. And I think we tend to get bogged down with the day-to-day, or as you said, get stuck in the office and it's hard to get out. So you've given some really good advice and motivation today. So thanks, Chris, for giving us your perspective on school leadership, and hope that the rest of your school year goes well as you finish out the next couple of months.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It's an honour to be asked. It's great. And again, I don't feel like I'm an expert in school leadership, but I'm certainly passionate. I'm certainly willing to learn and listen and always continue to try and get better. But yeah, we're in the early throes of spring here. We've had 2 days of sunshine in the UK, which is unprecedented. And listen, I wish everybody all the best for the rest of the school year as well, wherever you are listening from or watching from. It's a tough time sometimes being a school leader, but smile, rise above it, and lean on each other in tough times and celebrate the good times for sure.
Well, again, thanks, Chris. It's been a wonderful podcast today, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Deanne.
And that brings us to the end of another episode of Sparking Genius. I'd like to extend a big thank you to Chris Beddoes for sharing his insights on leadership, innovation, and the power of global connection in education. To our listeners, thank you for tuning in. If you found this episode meaningful, we'd love for you to subscribe to Sparking Genius and share it with fellow educators, parents, and innovators. Together, we can continue to explore the ideas that are transforming the world of education. I'm Deanne Drew, and I look forward to sparking more genius with you in our next episode. Until then, stay curious and keep pushing the boundaries of what's possible in education.